Like to call this meeting of the Legislative Finance Committee to order. And is there a quorum present? There's no quorum present. We have to wait for Representative Torkelson to move the minutes until we have a quorum. The purpose of the meeting today is to just have a discussion on grants and various other topics with the Minnesota State Arts Board representatives, the DNR, Met Council, and Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails. Now, in the bill that we have passed out, there is a provision in there dealing with the OLA recommendations regarding the supplement provision, and it has in some circles created a little bit of heartburn over how it's presented in terms. Well, the major heartburn concern I've heard deals with the word same or similar, and what I'm considering doing is recommending probably in Ways and Means is that or similar be stricken, so it's just same. And so with that, I would ask Mr. Nobles to come forward. I'm looking for him out here. Just see if you think that would take care of it.
Will we have a handout on this, Keith?
No.
No.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Nobles, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Jim Nobles. I'm the legislative auditor. And Mr. Chairman, I think that would be just fine. I don't think it would be damaged to what we're trying to accomplish, and if it's causing heartburn, we certainly want to relieve that without any harsh, side effects in the medication. So I think that would be fine, Mr. Chairman.
All right, thank you. Any questions on that topic of Mr. Nobles? Thank you. So I hope that helps out some folks. If you have opinions about it, and you are testifying today, you can just bring that up. I don't want to spend much time on it today, but we can also discuss it later if you think that is satisfactory or if you think there are other problems, which I might or might not agree with. So with that, the first entity, I guess, that we'd like to come before us today is the Minnesota State Arts Board. In the meantime, we have a quorum. And so, for April 16th, the birthday of Troy Curtis Hinesmith. Right? Got that right? Representative Torkelson, will you move the minutes, please?
I'd be happy to move the minutes of that date, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are approved. Now, Ms. Jens, would you identify yourself for the record, please?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. My name is Sue Jens. I am the Executive Director of the Minnesota State Arts Board, and I am technologically challenged, so I'm going to try to get this to work. And
is there someone that can help?
I'm not. Thank you.
I prefer the term technologically impaired.
Mr. Chair, the term I usually use for myself is Luddite.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And thank you, Mr. Chairman, thank you, members of the committee, for this opportunity to give you just a brief overview of the Arts Board and our statewide regional arts council system, with particular focus on our grant making and our grant programs and grant processes, which was the question we were asked to talk about today. Pardon me. Just as a reminder, the State Arts Board is a state agency in the executive branch. Our responsibilities exist in state statute, Chapter 129D, and we exist and have existed for decades now to stimulate and encourage the creation, performance, and appreciation of the arts throughout the state of Minnesota. state statute allows or sets out a number of responsibilities for the Arts Board, and I've highlighted just a few that I think are most relevant to this committee and to today's conversation. We exist to be a grant maker, to consider requests for financial assistance, to distribute grants and loans and other kinds of financial assistance to as broad an array of applicants and grantees as possible. We also serve as the fiscal agent for 11 regional arts councils that are spread throughout the state of Minnesota. And then the last, we exist primarily to be an advisor, to make recommendations about arts activities and other matters related to the arts in the state. A refresher, I know many of you are familiar with the Regional Arts Council system. You know there are 11 councils. They are autonomous nonprofits that have been designated by the Arts Board, and they receive a block grant. So it's approximately a third of the funding that is appropriated to us goes out directly as block grants to those 11 Regional Arts Councils. They have local boards that develop a plan on how to spend those dollars, and they have local decision-making authority. So they are devising grant-making programs and services at the local level. Their job really is to help get things started and to fund things that might be more informal, less established. And then one last overview before I go into the grant-making. Here is just a snapshot of the last biennium since we're in fiscal year 2016, I didn't bring those years as comparisons, but you'll see that the Arts Board is funded both with a general fund appropriation. That's roughly $7.5 million per year. So this is the 2 years of the biennium combined, so $15 million. And then the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund dollars that have been appropriated to us since the beginning of the Legacy Amendment have come to us in the three lines that are in the Constitution: arts and arts access, arts education, arts and cultural heritage funds. And the 2 years, 2014 and 15 together, was roughly $53 million. So that sets the stage. I will go a little bit deeper into how we award the dollars that we award. The Arts Board's uses about 5% of the general fund and legacy funds combined for program costs, administrative costs, technical assistance, those sorts of things. The other 95% go out the door, either as a grant to the Regional Arts Council or in direct grant making. First and foremost, we pay a great deal of attention to our accountability. All of our grant programs, and in most cases I will be talking about both the Arts Board and the Regional Arts Councils. If there are differences, I will highlight those. But we have competitive grant programs. We receive applications. We review those. Most of us, there are a couple of Regional Arts Councils that have their boards review grant applications, but most of us across the entire system recruit individuals to come in as citizen review panels. They meet in open public meetings. They discuss the applications. They assign a score, and then the highest scored applications are recommended to our board or to the Regional Arts Council board for funding. All applicants must spell out their outcomes and their evaluation plan. We monitor the grants during the grant period, and then every funded grant at the end of the project must submit a final report that talks about what the project was or what the activity was, what they accomplished, and most importantly, how they spent the dollars. It's really a three-step process. Our staff is there, and the Regional Arts Council staff is there to do technical assistance to make sure that our processes are fair and consistent, and then to manage the grants once they've been awarded. We use those volunteer advisors to review the requests and to rank them. And then our board or the Regional Arts Council board has final authority for approving grants. They may approve them as recommended, they may modify those recommendations, or they might deny some of them or change some of those. So the boards have final authority. And very quickly, I wanted to tell you a little bit about the grant programs. I can't tell you about all of them. You would need most of the afternoon to hear about that. The Arts Board has 10 grant programs. The Regional Arts Councils together have about 100 grant programs. So this will be a sort of a high-level summary. But I mentioned earlier that the legacy dollars that we receive come to us in three lines: arts and arts access, arts education, arts and cultural heritage. So on the left-hand side of this screen, you see the grant programs that the Arts Board is funding, with legacy dollars. On the right hand, you see general kinds of activities that regional arts councils are funding. These aren't specific names of grant programs. But we fund individual artists, we fund arts organizations that have been well established, we fund touring throughout the state, and we do two grant programs that are specifically meant to try to better serve what we would consider underserved audiences.
Ms. Jens,
yes,
I attended an event this weekend on Saturday, and I was assuming that it was funded through the Arts Board, and maybe you could verify that. I went to the Red Lake powwow at Bemidji. Is that funded through you or the Historical Society, what do you think?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if that particular project was funded by the Arts Board or the Regional Arts Council in that area. We certainly could look that up and get back to you.
Yeah, would you do so, please? I thought it was a very interesting event.
Sure. I didn't bring copies of this along, but we had put together a list of the grants for this two-year biennium, the 14-15 biennium. And it's relatively small type with the name of the grantee and the city and the amount and a one or two sentence description. The Arts Board list, just for these 2 years, is 102 pages long. The Regional Arts Council list, the 11 regions together, is 207 pages long. So it's more than 300 pages of grants just for this two-year period. So I can certainly check into that and let you know.
Thank you. And I'd like to note that those are available to members and also to the public on the Legacy website.
Yes, they are indeed.
Those are on the Legacy Committee page.
The Legacy Committee page, yes. All right, continue, please.
Very good. The second area that funding is appropriated is for arts education. Across the statewide system, we are funding lifelong learning in the arts. We believe whether you are 3 or 103, if you would like to learn to write poetry or learn to play the violin or learn to take photographs, there should be a way to do that. And so we do that in a variety of ways. The Arts Board has two grant programs that fund arts education. The regional arts councils are also funding activities in schools, and many of the regional arts councils have programs that will provide either scholarships or will match students who want to learn with a mentor or a practicing artist. And then the last area, the arts and cultural heritage area, again, the Arts Board is funding two different grant programs. We fund arts festivals, we fund community festivals that have an arts component, we fund folk and traditional arts, everything from Scandinavian bowl making to Dakota Wichahan, which is in Morton, Minnesota, and has an apprentice program to teach Native arts. We fund Somali poetry, we fund Hmong storytelling, we fund a whole variety of traditional art forms. The regional arts councils have similar kinds of programs. They've also been using some of their arts and cultural heritage fund dollars for public art, maybe a mural or a sculpture, something to celebrate a community or the history of a place. And they have several of them have grant programs that combine art and history and cultural heritage together, like funding a Chautauqua in Waseca or funding, this was an interesting project, a Depot Preservation Alliance in Baudette that brought in a singer-songwriter at the opening of a settlement and transportation museum exhibition. So they're doing things that combine those three areas together. I'm going to leave you with a few numbers, and then I will take your questions. Again, the 2014-2015 requests and grants, these 300 pages of grants, together, we as a system reviewed 7,600 grant applications. We awarded 4,500 grants, awarded about $61 million. Grants going all over the state to all of the various kinds of activities that you've seen. The regional arts councils are able to fund about 72% of the applications they receive. The Arts Board is able to fund just under 40% of the applications. I remember when the Legacy Amendment was passed, and then Chair Murphy said, "What would you ever do with all of this money?" And it was quite clear that even if we had triple the money, there would always be great projects and things that could be funded.
I well remember the day when Chair Murphy threw it open to the public and asked them to come to our committee meeting, and tell them how they thought the money should be spent. A day and night and early morning that I will never forget.
Mr. Chair, I remember those 2 a.m. hearings as well. And I think we all learned a lot.
No, it was, remember, it was only midnight in California. So, technically, we were out by midnight. Isn't that correct, Representative Murphy?
That's absolutely correct.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I stand corrected. I am time impaired as well. I think what those hearings told you and what we see in the 7,500 grant applications that we received, 7,600 grant applications in a two-year period, is that Minnesotans care deeply about the arts. There is no limit to the kinds of projects and ideas and wishes that people have. And the dollars are being put to use in really important ways to impact Minnesotans of all ages, in every county, in every community. So I would be happy to conclude there and open for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Jens. Representative Murphy?
Well, I too have gone to many things in the communities that I serve and throughout northern Minnesota that received arts grants. And it was beyond the expectations of any of those people that came and gave us their vision for the future on those late nights. But the one that impressed me the most as being more than what people thought of at the beginning was this fall in throughout the month of October when the Minnesota Opera came to northern Minnesota. And they came to the libraries, and they came to schools, and they had a residency at the Hermantown schools. Over 700 children were exposed every day of the week, that week that they attended. And then on Saturday of Halloween, in the middle of the afternoon at the Deck in Duluth, the opera was performed like we had never ever seen before. And the hundreds of people that had never been exposed, from four-year-olds all the way up, were there and were amazed, and it was just wonderful. And the opera received some money from the arts board for that outreach. And so I don't know how it's going to be followed up in the future, but we want more.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. This one question I have. Do you know if any of the grant money given by the state arts board is used by recipients for out-of-state travel?
Mr. Chair, all activities that are funded with the legacy funds must take place within the state of Minnesota, and that is stated in the grant guidelines, and they need to check off a box and assure us that they will not be spending dollars outside of the state.
Okay, thank you. Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Jens, correct?
Yes.
Okay, sorry, I'm awful with names, so I wanted to make sure I said that right. Can I some of the numbers, if I could just get a little bit of clarity, I appreciate it. So I'll be referring, I think, primarily to on our handout here of the slides that you have between pages 3 and page 7. So I don't know which slide numbers they are. So my first question is the grants awarded in this biennium are $61.9 million. But I see on the other one the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund totaled $53,350. So my first question is what's the? I would have expected those numbers to be the same, so they're different. How come? Just curious.
Ms. Jens.
Mr. Chair, Representative Miller, thank you for pointing out that I failed to mention that the requests and grants slide that you're referring to is all requests and grants, so that would also include the general fund dollars.
Okay.
That's not just the legacy.
So some of the money comes from general fund for the grants. Okay.
It does.
And then, Mr. Chair.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Jens, I see, if I understand this right, then there is, on page 3, there's the 1415 appropriations, and we have the general fund of about $15 million total, and then 53 below. Now, I assume that the $15 million in general funds goes to what we generally call administrative costs and things like that of the Arts Council. Is that correct?
Ms. Jens.
Mr. Chair, Representative
And maybe
Miller,
some grants with what you just said.
The $15 million that is general fund, that isn't, pardon me, much of that $15 million is being used for grants.
Okay.
The line that you see, I'm on page 5, the line that you see grants, programs, and services, that first line, that includes the $9,600,000 on the Arts Board column. All of that is grants.
Okay. Oh, okay. I see how it's broken down. I apologize. Yeah.
That's all right. And then the middle column, the $4,278,000 to regional arts councils, predominantly grants, but they do use some of that for their program costs.
Okay. So programs and services are kind of like the cost of... I don't mean to, in an insulting way, lump it under all administrative, but I just want to make sure, kind of grants versus administrative is the way I'm breaking them both down.
Mm-hmm.
So, Mr. Chair?
Representative Miller.
Thank you. I want to be very respectful. I don't want to jump outside the lane. So then with Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, the way I understand you're saying it is that there are some administrative costs of the granting, and maybe up in the general budget also, but you're referring to those as 5%. Does the state take 5%, the state Arts Council take 5%? Do the regional ones also take 5% when they someone applies for a grant, they're awarded? Is there a 5% administrative cost involved with those grants?
Ms. Jens.
Mr. Chair, Representative Miller. When the legislature appropriates the dollars to us, you have been assigning to us how much we can spend on things that are not grant costs, on not grants that go out the door. So the operations and services line and the fiscal oversight and admin line are the dollars that the Arts Board uses for all of the program expenses. So those citizen volunteers who come in, their travel, their meal costs. We also use those dollars for technical assistance when we go out and do information sessions, for outreach, those sorts of things. So it's not admin in the specific sense of it's the person who's doing payroll, that's in there, but it's also program costs as well. The Regional Arts Council's administrative costs are not broken out in the appropriation that you give to us, so they determine what amount of money they need for their program costs for their other direct services, and then they take that out of those block grants. We have an agreement with them that no more than 10% to 15% of the funds should be used for those kinds of costs, and the rest of the money should go out as grants or direct services.
Okay. One more question, then a quick statement afterwards, Mr. Chair, and then I'll...
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So do you have just a rough number of what I'm looking at is basically about $68 million worth of money that goes into the Arts Council? Do you have kind of, if it's not, like if I get a grant, and when I say grant, I mean like I want to do this and I'm awarded $500, I'm awarded $25,000 to spend into my budget of whatever I'm doing. So if you take that money out, and again, I'm just kind of very simply and sort of bluntly separating that money out from the money that's used for other things, whether it's technical assistance or it's administrative or all these other things, how much, and I can use a different term than administrative, but how much is not going literally to the grant? The grantee, how much money of that $68 million is roughly going to the other stuff that the Arts Council? You get how I'm kind of dividing it down? I'm just kind of saying there's money that goes to the person who says we're using this money for whatever event or whatever they're doing,
mm-hmm.
or this sculpture,
mm-hmm.
whatever the case mm-hmm. may be. How much of the $68 million is going to the other stuff?
Sure.
Ms. Jens.
Mr. Chair, Representative Miller, I think I get the gist of your question now. Speaking for that first column, that Arts Board column, 94% of the funds are going out as grants, and just over 5% are staying at the Arts Board for those other costs. In the Regional Arts Council line, it's more like 85% is going out as grants, and up to roughly 15% okay. is staying for program costs. And those program costs might be technical assistance
sure.
or other things.
Sure. Okay.
And those are really round numbers. I'd be happy to talk with you more about that. If
round
if
numbers
that would be
are
helpful.
Fine. Okay. Thank you.
Representative Miller?
Mr. Chair, the only, for however long I may, thank you very much. For the time that I may be blessed or not be blessed to be on this, I still need to be educated on the support versus supplant, because the way that I see this is that if we're putting $15 million of general fund money into grants and administrative costs and also arts or legacy funds into that, if for the sake of argument, the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund went, I see those two intertwined, and so I don't understand how you're not supplanting what general fund dollars are doing in that.
Well, thank you, Representative Miller, and of course we're delving a little bit into the murky areas of the legacy amendment. We are attempting to do some clarification with the supplanting and supplementing, but I anticipate that will continue to be something that we're trying to clarify as we go along. And also, you're getting into the administrative cost issue, and that was another area that, you know, the OLA made some recommendations, and where we are currently is that everything has to be directly related to or necessary for the project to be an administrative cost. We actually, in the beginning, I think, Representative Murphy, didn't we have like a 2% administrative cost, which we received many complaints was unworkable. So percentages have been problematic for us. If this proves to be problematic, if they are exceeding what we think is reasonable, then, and I left the door open when we changed this before, that we will go back to percentages and hold them to it. But that's one of the reasons why we're having this type of meeting to discover what is going on with that. With that, Representative Green, see, you're chomping at the bit there.
What do you mean by that? Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Lenz, I have a series of questions. It probably won't be as bad as you think, because I thought you were going to be here all the whole time. So I have questions, a lot of questions. But I'll narrow them down. Is there any means for you guys to go in and look at the projects that you're supporting and gauge them whether or not they truly meet the legacy requirements?
Ms. Jens.
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, we do that in several ways. One is through the application itself. When an applicant tells us how they'd like to spend the dollars, that's the first place when we decide whether it meets our criteria and meets the kinds of things that we have established those funds ought to be spent on. We do monitor. We don't get to see every single activity that's funded, nor do the Regional Arts Councils because of the volume. But we do then receive their final reports that tell us how those dollars were spent and what they accomplished with the dollars. And if for some reason they didn't do what they had proposed in the project, if for some reason there was something that seemed inappropriate with the use of funds, we would set them aside and not fund them again in the future. Or if they actually spent money on things that were not allowable, we would ask for those funds back. So there are ways that we can make sure that the dollars are doing the things that they were intended to do.
Representative Green.
Mr. Chair, have you ever gone and back to any recipients and asked for the money back? And if so, have you received it?
Ms. Jens.
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, there have been a few situations where we have had a project was not completed, a final report was not submitted back to us, so we didn't have a way of verifying. And we request those funds back, and in fact now the Arts Board has an agreement with the Department of Revenue to help collect funds that need to come back to the state if they are not being used in the appropriate way.
Representative Green?
Mr. Chair and Ms. Lentz, are you familiar with the LO Legislative Auditor's Report that was let in February 2015?
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, yes, I am.
Okay. Then I would like to ask you a couple questions on that. You had stated that your administrative costs are around 5.6% approximately.
Ms. Jens?
Mr. Chair, yes, we use approximately 5% of the state funds for those administrative and program costs.
Representative Green?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Lentz, in here on page 12 of this report, it states that in at least one case, it shows 36% of the money went for administrative costs. Are you familiar with that portion?
Ms. Jens?
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, I am.
Can you explain that?
Representative Green?
Ms. Jens.
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, yes, yes, I can. The auditors were looking at both the reports that were submitted to the Arts Board, and they were also looking at the internal documents of that particular Regional Arts Council, their internal financial information. And in one of those reports, all of the staff costs, whether it was a program cost, whether it was related to direct services or not, all of the staff costs had been listed in one line with the headline, with the header on it, administration. And while those actually were program costs and they were direct service costs, they weren't administrative costs, so they were inaccurately labeled in that particular report. When we looked at the audits, when we looked at the final reports that came in, and they had broken out those salaries into the program areas and into the direct service areas, then there wasn't an issue with it.
Representative Green?
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you. That's good to hear. The other part of this is there, I won't go through all of them. I've got quite a few, but there was one case. You had stated that you review these, and without mentioning any names out of the report, there was two grantees that were awarded $100,000 and $60,000 respectively. They did not provide information or documentation of how the money was spent, and you apparently, the Arts Board was aware of that, and instead of questioning them, you awarded them another $7,000. Can you explain that?
Ms. Jens.
Mr. Chair, Representative Miller, yes. That's a situation with two organizations that are, they're culturally based. They're organizations working very much with the grassroots Asian population. And we took great care with this organization because we weren't sure to what extent there might be language barriers or to what extent there might be questions or problems understanding requirements. So we took our time with that organization. With actually those two organizations. We did follow through and make the payments on those grants, although we are in a process with them of deciding whether or not they should continue to be eligible to apply for funding. We're still trying to get from them documentation and invoices that could help us understand how the dollars would be spent. For the most part, we believe that the state dollars were spent as they had been proposed. We have some questions about their matching funds and how those funds were generated. And so we're absolutely committed to the fact that we want to use the state dollars in the best way, but we're also dealing with some groups that are not yet as skilled in fundraising, not yet as skilled in understanding how some of the processes that they might need to do are to work. And so we're both trying to help them get better at what they do and also make sure that the funds are spent as they were intended.
Representative Green?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, that sounds really good, except for that this is over $160,000, almost $170,000 that may not have gone for what it was supposed to, and apparently there's not adequate documentation, because from what this report says, it has to do with excessive mileage, unreadable receipts, out-of-state gas receipts, vehicle rentals that did not match project dates, and other questionable costs. Now, I can appreciate the ethnic part of this, but the reason I didn't bring it in is because it shouldn't even be relevant. I mean, we have these laws, and they were put in place for a specific reason. And the job of the board is to see to it that this money is spent in accordance with the law. And so I hope that that will be resolved in the future. And that this would, at least follow up on some of these, because there's a few more in here too. But with that, Mr. Chair, I guess I will let it go.
Thank you, Representative Green. Ms. Jens, do you have any comments on that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, that particular issue is not resolved yet. If at the end of the investigation we find that the funds were not indeed spent the way they were to have been spent, the funds will come back to us, and the organization will not be eligible to apply in the future. Just want to reassure you of that.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Seeing none, thank you, Ms. Jens.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members of the committee.
Mr. Meyer, take your seat, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman.
Welcome to the committee.
For the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources. I also have Laura Price with me from our Parks and Trails Division. And as we're getting set up here, I just want to introduce a couple of our grant staff. Mr. Paul Perman is here with us today. He's our Parks and Trails Legacy Program Consultant, working directly with the Parks and Trails Fund. And also Audrey Mullery is here from our grant staff. These are two of the folks that help us get all of this money and the grants out the door, applications in the right form and things like that, and work with our customers.
Did you say Mullery?
Yeah.
Mullery,
I'm sorry.
All right, I just want to make sure that there wasn't.
I'm too used to saying Mullery, not Mullery. Mr. Chairman, for the record, today we want to just kind of go through a variety of different grant programs that we have. We have six different grant programs related to parks and trails within the state. Some local, some regional, statewide, and then we have a federal grant program as well. So I believe after our last conversation, there was some interest from the committee about trying to understand these different programs that we have and how they all kind of fit together. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'm going to have Ms. Price run through the information on the grants programs. Then we can answer questions you have related to this or anything else that we may be able to help you with.
Welcome, Ms. Price.
Yes. Laura Price, for the record. Thank you for the opportunity. We'll go through these five grant programs that are focused on parks and trails. Again, as Assistant Commissioner mentioned, all of our grant programs are mentioned on our website. We'll start out focusing on local grants, and there's two I'd like to highlight. The Local Trail Connections Grant Program is really designed to develop trail connections for local communities between those residential areas and places that matter, like regional and statewide trails. And so the purpose on this program is not necessarily to create lots of new trails, but rather to build the connections that link our systems. This program is really important for local communities. You see the demand on the bottom. The requested funding is in green, and the awarded funding is in the blue line on the bottom. This program has been in place since 1993, and it's had a variety of past funding sources. Currently, Lottery in Lieu is the most consistent source of funding for this program, but others have included the Future Resources Fund, Environment and Natural Resources Trust Fund, Bonding General Fund as well. The next one I'll highlight is Outdoor Recreation Grants, and these are focused on local parks. And so I want to highlight that these first two grant programs we're discussing are on a local focus. They're not the same as the regional and statewide significant parks and trails that we'll get into with Legacy. This program is designed to really help with acquisition, development, and redevelopment of local outdoor recreation park facilities. And we use the SCORP, the State Comprehensive Outdoor Recreation Plan, is what we use to guide selection for these projects. The graph here also gives you a sense of some of the funding history. The applications received are shown in green, and the applications funded are shown in blue. And this is an interesting program in that it was funded originally with the Land and Water Conservation Fund. This is a federally funded program, And in the early years, in the 70s and 80s, there was widespread use of this. Probably every county in the state has grants with this program. However, in recent years, the federal funding has diminished dramatically. So those local communities have significant needs for some of these park opportunities. And the dip there is when there was no federal funding in 2008 to 2011. But the demand, as you can see, has been coming back and is still there. Next, we'll talk about the Parks and Trails Legacy Grants, obviously of keen interest to this committee. I think they're a grant program that many of you are well familiar with. Really, this is to support accelerated acquisition, development, and restoration of park and trails facilities of regional or statewide significance outside of the seven-county metropolitan area. And we have really used the Parks and Trails 25-year legacy plan as guidance for the criteria in identifying and selecting grants since the inception of this program. And that Parks and Trails legacy plan was developed with widespread public involvement. We administered the program from 2010 to 2015, and then in 2016, we really transferred this over to the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission, and they now are really taking strategic direction in creating a vision for Greater Minnesota and also providing recommendations for those grant programs. DNR is still administering the fiscal aspects of the program, as well as providing technical assistance to grant recipients. And so we've really transitioned this to Greater Minnesota, and we feel that that relationship is working very well, and we're excited for the work that they're doing for Greater Minnesota. Okay. It is also worth mentioning other regional grants. And these are much smaller grant programs, but they have been in existence for many years, and so we wanted to explain them and describe them since we knew you had some questions about related grant programs. The first is the Regional Park Grant Program, and you can see the purpose there on the top. Again, it's similar to really accelerate the acquisition and development of these outdoor park facilities of regional significance. And again, similarly using the 25-year Park and Trail Legacy Plan and SCORP as guidance. This began in 2002, and it's really been dependent on annual appropriations. So the funding history has been highly varied by funding source as to whether it was available or not. Currently, there's no funding, and demand has gone down somewhat. The match on this grant is higher than the legacy, and so really a lot of the people, I think, are now applying to legacy grants. But this has been inconsistent funding throughout the years, depending on annual appropriation. Secondly mentioned there is regional trail grants, and that has a similar purpose to accelerate acquisition and development of regionally significant trails. And there's a number of criteria similar to other programs that we have used. And this program has been in effect since 1997. Similarly, it has had various annual funding sources. Most recently, lottery in lieu has been a consistent funding source at about $200,000 to $250,000 per year. And so while it's not a big source of funds, we are still distributing grants for that regional trail program. Finally, we felt it was worth mentioning a very significant federal recreational trail grant program. I expect many of you are familiar with this as well. It's been in place for many years, since the 90s. This is working on acquisition, development, redevelopment, and maintenance of motorized, non-motorized, and joint trails. So really looking at the diversity of trail opportunities around the state. We work with the Minnesota Recreational Trail Users Association. They recently celebrated their 25th anniversary, and working in partnership, they select and rank the programs and grants, and then we work with them to review and approve those grants and distribute them. And the funding for that program, again, is federal funding, and it's been about $2 million annually for quite some years now. And so with that, we really just wanted to give you a quick overview of some of the major grant programs that are related to parks and trails. We feel that these grant programs are a very important part of creating an integrated recreational system in Minnesota. And so they are important and complement the work that we do at DNR, and believe that they provide a lot of opportunities for local and regional grant programs.
One question. The maintenance, of course, of trails is important. And for legacy trails, do you plan on using the legacy money for maintenance?
We don't use the legacy for the maintenance of the trails. Legacy is for those new opportunities, and if we're talking about the grant programs, then that's really for acquisition, development of those trails, not for regular day-to-day operations and maintenance of those trails or parks.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Questions? Representative Torkelson, do you have any questions?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Along those same lines, so if we're not funding maintenance and we're building trails, what is the plan for long-term plan for maintenance as we increase steadily increase the inventory of trails in Minnesota?
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Meyer.
Representative Torkelson, thank you very much for that question. I mean, I think in a lot of conversations that are going around here right now, that is the question that we need to answer. How do we continue to build the system that we want to build, provide what our citizens and constituents want us to do, but also take care of it? And we've been having these conversations with the asset preservation within the bonding capital investment committee, and we appreciate the concern there. I think we need to grapple with that answer. We need to come up with something and that people can support and move forward with, so we also have a source of funding for the maintenance, the crack sealing, the sweeping, whatever needs to be done on these systems. We've talked about it as a department, and you know those costs are driving us and some management options right now. So I anticipate the department, with or without some guidance from the legislature, coming back next session, having stakeholder conversations over the interim, coming back with a proposal on how do you maintain what we're investing in right now.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you. Do you have any estimate on how quickly our inventory of trails is increasing, or to what degree? I don't know how you quantify that by miles of trail or how you take a look at that. But if, as we go through 25 years of legacy, how many miles are we going to end up with at the end of that time?
Mr. Chairman,
Mr.
Representative Torkelson, I apologize for not having that information at my fingertips right now, but we do have some facts and slides I can send you either later today or tomorrow morning for sure that focuses on those issues. We recently had a hearing where we focused on that exact issue. So I can provide some more information on that.
Thank you.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Along the trails line again, as some of these programs are focused on local trails, do you require any local matches for these grants?
Yes, in some cases we do, Representative Chair. It varies by program. For example, the Outdoor Recreation Grant Program has a 50% cash or in-kind. The Regional Park Grant Program has a 40% cash or in-kind match. The Local Trail Connections Program has a 25% match. And the Regional Trail Grant Program has a 25% cash match.
Thank you. Representative
Torkelson.
And Mr. Chair, and does that partnership, is that partnership reflected in the maintenance plan for these trails?
Ms. Price.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I would have to look into that to find out the specifics on the maintenance. I believe that is a separate, but I can look into and find that answer for you.
Thank you.
Representative Torkelson.
One more question, Mr. Chair, as long as I have Mr. Meyer up there and I can victimize him. I've been getting quite a few emails lately about Fort Ridgely. I'm just curious how it's going. I realize it's not related to this presentation, but it's a hot topic in my area.
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Torkelson, I believe there's a meeting coming up this week, Wednesday perhaps, with the delegation that's impacted from the decisions that are going on there and Friends of Fort Ridgely State Park and other folks. Wednesday, 9 o'clock perhaps. You know, it becomes a...
Mr. Meyer, where is that meeting?
It's going to be here in the complex somewhere.
It's, Mr. Chair...
Senate building, I believe.
Yeah. Representative Miller?
Mr. Chair, it's 9 o'clock in 3414 Minnesota Senate building.
Thank you.
Yep.
Mr. Meyer?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Torkelson, and Representative Torkelson, first of all, I want to thank you for your patience with
this issue, and Representative Miller as well, and Representative Riddall. It's one that we don't take lightly at all. It's a discussion and a decision about where do we go with the park system in the future, and should we be operating a golf course on a historic battlefield? We look at what the purpose is for outdoor recreation and the Outdoor Recreation Act for state parks, and it's to protect those parks in a natural, basically, history in perpetuity. We've come to the point where we can no longer afford to operate a golf course at Fort Ridgely State Park. We look forward to having a new purpose at that state park, and we need to work with the citizens and the stakeholders and the area communities on what that future looks like. But, you know, it's just like a lot of other communities and golf courses, we're losing money and that we would rather invest in other parts of the system. That's kind of where we're at with our system plan. We've talked about that in the Environment and Natural Resources Policy and Finance Committee. The governor has a supplemental budget request before the legislature to help us pay the costs we're incurring right now. And the vision that we have is that we're going to heavily invest in the parks that are the jewels, the crown jewels of our state, continue to expand those. We have another group of parks that we want to maintain current investments and maintain the visitorship. And there are some other parks that really should be primitive parks, or you know, more rustic kind of campgrounds, or there's some other areas of the state where we're working with local units of government to I don't want to say divest, but to have these parks run differently with local units of government. Some counties want to take over some of these responsibilities, and the other areas of the state we're working with local friends groups, local citizens groups, to help us continue the work that needs to be done, but at a much more efficient rate. So we're at a point in time where the costs of operating parks, we can't operate every park the same way. We're going to have a person behind the desk, and we're going to have people checking in, and we're going to have every park cut grass the same way and things like that. We have to look at it system by system, operation by operation, and make sure that these parks are providing the needs that are out there, but also doing so in a fiscally responsive manner.
Just one more follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Representative Torkelson.
Thank you for that, Mr. Meyer, and I would encourage you to be sure to reach out to those friends groups. They are extremely valuable. I just remind you that Fort Ridgely is the only park in Minnesota where you can legally hit an eagle.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. Mr. Meyer, what are other ideas for the use of the golf course? I mean, frankly, one of the best ways to preserve a historic site could be to leave it as a golf course, because there aren't going to be buildings on it.
Mr. Chairman, the golf course runs down the middle of a historic battlefield. So with that in mind, we would rather replicate and dictate the actual battlefield rather than a golf course that's running down the same lands where people sacrificed their lives and a lot of important parts of Minnesota history took place. So that's one of our big options, is looking at creating and establishing a National Historic Battlefield there and try to do that. It's a very historic, one of the most historic sites within the state of Minnesota besides Fort Snelling of that era. So we need to work with the Nicollet County Historical Society, Minnesota Historical Society, the friends groups, and other folks to try to develop the vision and the redevelopment of this important historical piece of our state. So I can understand where some people might think that's appropriate to play golf down the battlefield, but it's just one of those conversations we need to have and move forward with what's the best position and the best management opportunity for that state park.
I think I heard a suggestion in there somewhere that Fort Snelling, or that Fort Ridgely, should be rebuilt like Fort Snelling. I'll accept that as no comment.
We can speak with the chairman of capital investment about that proposal.
Okay, thank you. Representative Kahn.
I did a proposal at our last meeting that we use a certain amount of, which was resoundingly voted down, that for the clean water place, that we do a certain proportion of each appropriation to do some analysis and see what grants are working and which ones aren't. And maybe that's something that it would be appropriate to do for all of these ones, to have a not looking at what we're doing right now, but certainly when we do the next set of appropriations, to say so that we don't have to wait for the time of doing a full legislative audit survey, but we can start to kind of get ahead of where something becomes a legislative audit scandal and try and get ahead. I think clean water is probably the most appropriate where you could probably have measurements, but I think the idea of looking at customer satisfaction, at looking at needs, usage, and so forth would be appropriate for all of our granting groups. And I wish that we would start to look at least requiring in the next set of appropriations that we look at evaluation instead of the excitement of always doing new programs as opposed to seeing what programs are working.
Thank you, Representative Khan. I prefer words like dilemma or questions to scandal, but...
Well, whatever.
We can work on that. Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman, if I can respond to that right away.
Representative Khan.
I think it's really nice to look at it when it's a dilemma and a question before it gets to a scandal. So,
I agree.
If you're proposing looking at it even before I am, that's even better.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this for either testifier. Mr. Myers, you had stated that you were looking to reach your goals. Can you tell me what the long-range goals are? Do you have a long-range plan for the parks and trails, and what is it?
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Green, thank you for that question. We have a plan in place, a 25-year vision for the state park and trail system. The other side of the coin that all of these grants we spoke of focus on are regional and local opportunities, right? Now, I know that there's been a lot of money that's been awarded to folks to try to figure out what the plan should be for the state, looking at where things connect. Unfortunately, that work has never developed into anything. There's been some maps made, but the work has never been completed on what the vision of the entire state system should be. And you know, talking about looking at programs at work, our grant programs work. There's specific criteria. We audit them, make sure there's a match there, make sure the work gets done. But there's I'm not advocating for this, but there's no master plan for the state, entire state, local, regional, state system. How should it all connect? How should we get there? A lot of it comes from your constituents who want a trail somewhere, and then we work with them and go through the process. But to look at a statewide system of local, regional, statewide facilities, like I said, has been tried before. It has never been completed, unfortunately. But we are interested in working with everybody at the table to come up with the vision of what is the state of trails? Where should the trails be throughout the state? How should we connect them? How should they be funded? How should they be maintained? And also with our state and regional park system. So that would be a good investment to make. Mm-hmm. To make sure it's invested with the right entity to get the work done. So, I don't know if Ms. Price has anything to add or not.
Thank you. Ms. Price?
Chair, Representative Green, I would also add that it recently, as relates to the 25-year Parks and Trails Legacy Plan, we have been working closely with Met Council in Greater Minnesota to really focus on coordinating more when it comes to thinking about a more seamless system of parks and trails in Minnesota. And so while we don't have the huge master plan that goes all the way from federal to state to regional to local, we do feel that we're making some strides towards trying to be more integrated in our vision and approach towards that. And as Assistant Commissioner Meyer said, look forward to more work in that area and work with our partners.
Representative Green?
Mr. Chair, thank you for that answer. We're spending a lot of money there for not having a plan. But anyway, I'll move on just a little bit here, and I'll apologize because, like I said, when I first got the notice for this meeting, I thought we were only going to do the arts portion, so I'm not 100% prepared here. But I did grab my copy of the Legislative Auditor's Report, and I'm waiting for the next one to come out. So when I get that, there would be probably some more questions. But for now, just in general, looking through the auditor's report, there seem to be a lot of discrepancies in how the money was handled, the recording of the money that the DNR did for the Clean Water Funds. Have you guys gone back and through this report and corrected the violations and fixed the, I don't know what I'm trying to use the right word here, fix the problem areas?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Green, I believe if you go to the, there should be a letter from the Commissioner of Natural Resources in that report that's appended that talks about our guidelines and how we were rectifying those issues raised, and I believe that all of those issues have been corrected to date.
Representative Green?
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I know that the Legislative Auditor's Report should verify that. But you know, there was some issues in here that I would say it's not a question of even paying the money back. It's a question of, for instance, here's one where $473,600 was reimbursed twice to the same people. There's other instances where money was appropriated out and it wasn't used, and so the entity that received the money stuck it into a money market account and drew interest on it, which is not acceptable. And so my question was that not so much each individual portion for now, I'll get those answers, but have the record keeping and the within your department and the internal controls been addressed?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Green, not having a copy of the report in front of me to actually see what you're talking about, I'm not going to go into those individual instances, but I can guarantee you that if they were raised in that report, they have been rectified. We take the work of the legislator auditor very seriously, and we do everything that we can to abide by the changes that need to be made and follow their recommendations.
Thank you.
Representative Miller, I'll just say this. We got about 6 minutes left on this, and then I need to get to the Met Council. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Miller.
Then I will be brief, Mr. Chair. I have a growing concern. We are spending a lot of money on parks and trails system, I know, through this and through other areas, and it was just stated that we don't have a plan, and I know that when I was in the Environmental Committee last week or the week before, whenever it was, there's a supplemental bill, in part the DNR saying we don't have enough money to whether it be maintain or operate, or there may be a combination of those different things. But as we're moving forward and putting a lot of money into parks and trails, if there's not a plan to how far this is going to go, we're only six, seven years into the legacy fund alone. There's going to be a lot more money put in, and we don't have the answers as to how we're going to maintain and operate these to standards. When is it that we are going to address these questions of a plan as to how much this plan is going to cost to not only implement but then maintain, operate, things like that? Because I just see if they're asking for more money this year through the Environment Committee, more money to be in a supplemental spending to be able to do things that they can't do now, how much more so 25 years from now? I think this is something that we need to really look closely at.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Meyer.
I apologize. I probably should have prefaced my comments about a plan for the statewide entire system that encompasses grants, it encompasses general fund, it encompasses bonding, it encompasses local funding issues. For the legacies piece, and we can leave this with you, but we do have a 25-year Parks and Trails legacy plan that covers the legacy spending. This is available on our website as well. So this was developed, as Ms. Price mentioned, between the state of Minnesota, the Department of Natural Resources, the Metropolitan Council, and the Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails Group. So I apologize if I went out and thought that there's no plan per se. The plan that we have is focusing really on the legacy spending, because that's frankly where a lot of these dollars have been coming from over the past 6 years, and where they probably will come from over the life of the fund. As the competition for bonding, as the competition for general fund and other sources, federal sources, lock-on, dwindles, people are going to become more and more reliant for the investments within the Parks and Trails Legacy Fund, and this plan outlines that. So we can leave this with you, Mr. Chairman, and the website we can forward to you as well.
Yeah, thank you. I think one of the concerns is that as we develop more and more trails specifically, and we're not using legacy funds to maintain them, that the expenses to maintain will grow and grow as the number of trails grow. Ms. Price.
Mr. Chair, Representative, as it relates to the Parks and Trails Legacy Plan, there are four main categories there. Some of it is for developing new, but there's also a major pillar, we call them, around taking care of what we have. So we can use funds for rehabilitating and ensure that we are trying to take care of what we have. It's just that we don't use it for the day-to-day, you know, operations and maintenance, sweeping and things like this. But we do have the ability to rehabilitate our system as part of this plan, as well as connect people to the outdoors and coordinate amongst each other as some of the main pillars of that plan.
Okay. Mr. Miller, Representative Miller, I need to move along here.
I'll be very brief.
Very brief, please.
Okay, Mr. Chair and Deputy Commissioner, so in that 25-year plan, that includes the 25-year plan with how much it's going to cost to operate and maintain these trails. That's included in that also?
Ms. Price.
Mr. Chair, Representative Miller, the specific dollar amounts are not laid out in this plan, but a vision for the future is laid out.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I'm wondering if we didn't have the legacy funds and we just had appropriations from the legislature to the department for parks and trails. If there is enough appropriations going to parks and trails from the legislature to DNR for parks and trails, or is the legacy fund, from your recent remarks, is a legacy fund promoting more parks and trails than would be there if we were just dependent on appropriations from the legislature to DNR for parks and trails? Do you have any factual information showing that parks and trails haven't gone down, appropriations for parks and trails haven't gone down as a result of the legacy funding?
Mr.
Chairman, Representative Murphy, the parks and trails funding, you have to kind of split it in two pieces, right? We have the operations Dave, biennial appropriations that have been there, and that's a constant yo-yo ride, if I want to call it that, where we've been up and down in deficit the past couple of years. We've had supplemental budget requests that we've been able to receive. General fund requests have been made, and they haven't been able to be funded completely. There's been some funding with other dedicated funds to provide some temporary relief for our operations budget. So on the operations side, it's been very unstable for the department. On the program side, on the investment side, it's been fitting. I mean, without the legacy fund, we wouldn't have the system that we have today. Our customers wouldn't be able to experience any of our ICANN series. I Can Camp, I Can Climb. All of these things are some of the most popular programs.
I Can Golf.
I Can Golf, yeah. We don't have that one right now. So So the money that the legacy is providing, the legacy amendment is providing for the state and also for the metropolitan and the greater Minnesota system for our parks and trails is phenomenal. I mean, if you took the whole legacy amendment without that, where we would be right now, we wouldn't be the Minnesota that people live here for. We wouldn't be the reason that people come here to recreate, to vacation. I mean, the clean water funding, the outdoor heritage funding, the parks and trails funding, the arts and cultural heritage, the legacy that we can leave for the citizens and our families within this state within these next 25 years is going to keep us on the top of the map. The problem we're going to have is making sure that we can continue to provide those investments where they need to be. And we're very, very stringent as an agency looking at supplant versus supplement. We've adopted an operational order that guides all of our legacy spending within the state, not only parks and trails, clean water, and outdoor heritage funds. So We're keeping very close tabs on that, but you know, if you, the biennial budget versus capital investment, I think if you want to look at it from Parks and Trails, it's just been a huge opportunity for us. And the support from traditional sources of funding remain to be somewhat at historic levels. The conservation side of it, land acquisition, just because of the pressures of a bonding bill and the politics related to, around a bonding bill, I think that the money for WMAs, SNAs, things like that have gone down. But on the Parks and Trails spending, for example, I believe the 2014 bill had almost $18 million of investment with capital investment. So I don't think there's any question about a supplement versus supplant issue there. So,
thank you. Mr. Meyer, we need to keep moving here. Sorry. All right, real quick, please.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Commissioner, you held up the 25-year plan for the legacy funding. Is there still a 25-year plan for Parks and Trails without the legacy funding?
Mr. Meyer. Chair, Representative Murphy, yes, we have what we call our systems plan that we're, that's on our website as well, and I can provide you a link to that, too.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Lilly, you got a quick one for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just really briefly, a couple of years ago, when I don't want to back up too far, but when we were in charge, I thought the way, and I encourage you to do the same as chairs, Representative Kahn and Wagenius and Hausman kind of got together, because there's a lot of these same funds, you know, and I think you guys have a great opportunity to do this as well. So, Chair Erdahl and the rest of you, your team, get together and kind of strategize and to kind of put the focus of the funds together to move Minnesota even farther. So I thought Representative Kahn and some of those did a good job with that. But briefly, Mr. Myers, I really appreciate your comments there, because I think you really captured the essence of the why the folks voted for the amendment and what it's done for our state. Kind of the nature of the conversation today, because there is so much use and so much demand, and you know, we all, with the spring, really, I've been through Minneapolis. Granted, that's not all our system, but people are really out using the trails in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Dakota County, and then of course in our area, we've had the problem with, I call it the crown jewel of our state trails, with the Browns Creek and Gateway Trail. But I know you've run into problems with funding, and you've kind of talked about how you're managing that. And but the reality is come down to money. So we're approaching the end of session. We're about a month out. Are you getting somewhere where you feel like there's going to be more funding? So that would be a question. And then you've alluded to there being a problem with, because there's some volunteer groups in these areas that would step up and perhaps help with some of the maintenance that we've discussed today, whether that's just simply cleaning off debris off the trail or whatever, but there's some insurance liability issues. So I was just wondering if you've been able to figure out some solution that can be workable there, because I know in our area we have some friends groups that would help with perhaps like the snow plowing or some of the local jurisdictions, but we're in a place where the DNR, because of liability, they can't. So that just seems like a nice thing to save the state some money perhaps, but you know, if we're not going to fund it, I'm afraid as a legislature, we're going to have to figure this out locally, you know, to, because the demand is clearly there for these trails to be used year-round by folks. So I guess basically,
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lilly, the short answer is yes, there is some funding in the House supplemental budget for us. Obviously, it's not the complete governor's recommendations, but we're hoping to move forward towards that as we close up the session. And we are working with legal counsel and staff on the liability. It comes down to liability and workers' compensation and tort claim. It becomes very complicated. Not enough time this session to solve the whole piece of it, but I'm hopeful that we can get some small progress made that would deal with the liability concerns that we have, and also continue our work with the local units of government, making sure that we can provide them the funding, which is a lot cheaper than the city of North St. Paul, which is right next to the trail, if they can run out there with their plow and do it rather than us having to come from Warner Road. Those are the types of solutions we're looking for in working with Parks and Trails Council and other stakeholders and friends groups to make sure we're able to provide the services that we have. So,
thank you, Mr. Meyer and Ms. Price.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members.
Now, representatives of the Metropolitan Council, please. You want to just start?
Yes. I'm guessing that's the right answer, sir.
Yes. We need the condensed version here.
Got it.
Welcome to the committee. Identify yourself, please.
Thank you, Chair Erdahl and members of the committee, for the opportunity to present to you today about our Parks and Trails legacy grant processes. My name's Emmett Mullen, and I'm the manager of the Metropolitan Regional Parks and Natural Resources Unit at the Metropolitan Council. Today, I've been asked to provide information on how the Metropolitan Regional System chooses grant recipients. And before I answer this question, I thought it might be helpful to give you a condensed bit of context about the Metro Regional System. This system was established by the legislature in 1974, and it wasn't like it was pulling in a brand new system. There were a lot of the elements of the system in place, but it really did pull in like Minnehaha Park and the Grand Rounds around Minneapolis, Como Park, into one functioning regional system. And today, the system is made up of 54 regional parks and park reserves. Park reserves are the large, real nature-based opportunities. There's over 348 miles of regional trails, and there's over 54,000 acres of land. As Representative Lilly mentioned, there's a lot of visitors out there. We do counts regularly, and we estimate 48 million visitors annually visit the Metropolitan Regional System. The legislature also defined the Metropolitan Council's ability to make grants to support this system. It's defined specifically 10 implementing agencies as the backbone of this system, the people who really manage the day-to-day on the ground parks and trails opportunities. And the law goes on to define these 10 implementing agencies, and so it's the seven counties in Hennepin County. It's you better known as Three Rivers Park District, Minneapolis, and the city of Bloomington. Excuse me, St. Paul and the city of Bloomington. When the Legacy Amendment passed in 2008, it created a constitutional amendment establishing the Legacy Fund, which is the topic of today's conversation and your committee. And 14.25% was dedicated to the Parks and Trails Fund to support parks and trails of regional or statewide significance. You also directed us to develop a 25-year plan to guide legacy spending, and that's what the DNR just showed as this plan that broadly defines the use of the legacy funds. And
for the metropolitan regional system, we do a plan also for the actual system called the Parks Policy Plan. This is done, as I said, every 5 years, and it provides a planning and administrative framework for the metropolitan regional parks and trails system. So I'm really winding up now, Mr. Chair, but to get to your question, the legacy funds go to the 10 implementing agencies and are dispersed through a funding formula that is established in statute. As an aside, 100% of these funds are dispersed directly to the implementing agencies. We don't use funding for administrative costs at the Metropolitan Council. All projects put forward to receive legacy funds in the metropolitan system go through a rigorous process of selection that begins with the implementing agencies prioritizing and selecting their top projects to be get funded. Then the Metropolitan Council, our job is to review those projects and make sure they're consistent with the legacy plan to ensure that they're consistent with the 2040 Parks Policy Plan. That's the Met Council's regional plan. And then finally, a council-approved master plan. So in order for a legacy project to get money, it needs to get through all those requirements. Finally, the council submits the aggregated list of these projects to you as directed. And I got that, but here it is. This comes to you every 2 years. These have all the prioritized projects. That's my presentation today. I hope it helps answer any questions you might have, and I'm also happy to stay here and answer any other questions you might have.
Oh, thank you. Representative Green, you got about 1 minute left here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Mullen, do you know how you monitor the grant recipients after they receive the grants? Do you go in and test them like most legacy agencies or agencies that get legacy money are required to go in over $50,000 and monitor once, over $250,000 to monitor once a year? Do you do that?
Mr. Mullen.
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, we are in the process right now of strengthening our internal controls. Excuse me, as directed,
which are concerns,
and are directed by the legislative auditor in a recent audit report. But we do require for every legacy project a final report that we review, and we ensure that what was developed by the project matches with what was originally in the grant language. That wasn't as clear as I wanted it, Representative Green, but the answer is yes.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I do have some more questions, but in the interest of time, I think I'll let Representative Torkelson have his say.
Thank you. Mr. Mullen?
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you.
And now we have representatives from Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails. Welcome.
Thank you.
Identify yourself for the committee, please.
Renee Mattson, Executive Director of the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission. Thank you for having us here today. I think a lot of your questions have probably already been answered by my colleagues before us, but I would like to point out that you all received our first report back in January. You have this handout in front of you. It's a report of our funded projects as well as our designated parks and trails in the state of Minnesota. Since the inception of Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Commission in October of 2013, a lot of work has been done by volunteers driving this process, and I'm always honored, and I have to say that it's really neat for me to be the first executive director and represent an organization that on their own has done so much with the interest of furthering parks and trails in Greater Minnesota. So this culmination of their hard work really resulted in this report in front of you. To date, we've designated 27 parks and trails as regionally significant. And in this first round of funding, I'm pleased to say that we had 25 projects that we were able to fund out of a total request of 31. That amounted to just over $16 million. And of those requests, if you look, some of them are very large requests. And one of the benefits that we have as the commission, we don't have a ceiling on granting. And I think the difference there is very significant. We can come into a community with a great project that has been regionally designated and finish that project for them. They don't have to wait for years to cobble together funding requests. We can finish the project, and that community can become an area for regional visitors, driving economic impact because of the impact that we can make with those funding requests. So thank you, first of all, to the Legacy Committee for making the funds available to us. And really, when you look through these requests, what makes me so proud of what we're doing is the people then who are impacted by this can get out and enjoy the parks and trails that are built, maintained, improved through these dollars. And really, one of the four pillars that Laura had alluded to earlier was connecting people to the outdoors. And I always say it's wonderful if we're building parks and trails, but we have to remember that the most important thing that we can do is get users into those parks and trails so that we don't have pristine, empty parks and trails, but they're well used, which is a Minnesota legacy. That's what we're known for. That's what we do. And in some of our granting, we were able to be to do some things we called prototype projects, for instance. You'll notice that the Robert Nye Park, in both years of granting cycles, one of the things that we did for two counties combined, Stearns and Wright, was provided funding for a park specialist, someone to get out into their parks between the two counties and do programming that will bring people to those parks. And it's very trackable. We look at this as a prototype project because depending upon how this works for those two counties, this might be something that we continue for other organizations looking for the same sort of assistance to drive people to their assets. So it's been exciting. It's been a very fast couple of years of work for this all-volunteer group that did so much to enable me to sit here before you today and talk about our funding process and in our first round of grants.
Thank you. Any questions? Well, then, thank you very much, Ms. Mattson. You got off easy. I'd like to call down Catherine Zimmer.
Is she the same group?
Good afternoon, Chair Erdahl.
Welcome, Ms. Zimmer. Please introduce yourself and the group that you are representing.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Catherine Zimmer, and first and foremost, I am a citizen and a small business owner in Minnesota, and I'm also the executive director of a small nonprofit called Women Observing Wildlife Minnesota, and myself and Holly Jenkins, who is in the audience, she is the acting director of another small nonprofit called Wilderness in the City. Both of us have been watching and observing the expenditures associated with legacy dollars, and we've had the opportunity to speak a bit with Chair Erdahl and Representative Aaron Murphy and Representative Kahn about what we've observed in reviewing actually reports that have come out of the Parks and Trails Legacy our Parks and Trails Council and the legacy overall. And I wanted to bring to light the information that we found and I pulled together from those reports so you can have a better idea of how the money is being spent. First of all,
I should say you've only got a couple minutes.
Yeah. You all know that the citizens, when we voted for the legacy amendment, for the most part, we were voting for, and this actually is stated in the Parks and Trails 25-year plan for legacy, that we were voting for natural resources, clean water, and a next legacy of stewards. However, when we look at how the monies have been appropriated and spent, actually in the 2015 Parks and Trails report, a fifth pillar was added outside of the planning for the in the report, and a fifth pillar was added called new development. And for Met Council, 49% of their legacy money was spent on new development. Greater Minnesota Parks and Trails, 61% was spent on new development. And the DNR Parks and Trails, 20% was spent on new development. The 25-year Parks and Trails legacy plan initially had four pillars, which Ms. Price, I think, from DNR alluded to earlier. And there wasn't a pillar for new development. And those pillars are connect to out of doors, create, acquire land and create opportunities, take care of what we have, including natural resource restoration. And the fourth pillar is partner. So the new development pillar includes things like trail development, transportation grants, new swimming areas, shelters, and showers. Under take care of what we have and natural resources, and by the way, citizens also said they wanted a balanced approach to spending. And I will tell you that I wasn't part of that Parks and Trails legacy plan at all. I didn't participate. This is what I found was laid out in the black and white on websites. But citizens wanted natural resources protected, yet only 33% of the monies is being spent on take care of what we have. And when you look at that's Met Council's, Greater Minnesota, only 13% is being spent in that matter. And when you look further, the examples of take care of what we have include reconstructing paved trails, reconstructing parking lots, beach renovations, and expansion of nature centers. So there isn't money really being spent on maintenance. Most of the money is being spent on new development. The spending is unbalanced, which is definitely contrary to what citizens intended, and the spending is not being spent on natural resources and restoration, which is the reason we go to the parks. We go to the parks to be outdoors and enjoy natural resources, and when we keep building it over and paving paradise, to quote a phrase, that's not what we're getting out of the legacy dollars. So I have this information, and I will be happy to send it to Gavin, and he can forward it to all of you. And Holly and I have also developed a white paper with respect to this.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Chair Bell.
The committee now is, the next meeting is subject to call the chair. And there's nothing else to come before us today. Thank you for your participation in this meeting. And, well, King, this case is closed.